It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner.
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by
Gordon Ranch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
Are you ready for Trade Target Tuesday?
What's up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show at Locked On Rockets, and also the blog at ClutchCityCR. So as I already said, we are here and ready to discuss another episode, another show of the Rockets Trade Target Tuesday style. And to lead things off, I'm going to go ahead and blame Sir Karthik Prasad at Stanford KP on Twitter for this one. But I have now decided that for the first trade in this first segment, so just like the last Trade Target Tuesday, what we're going to do is I'm going to suggest a trade in this first segment, a trade in the second segment, and then I'll get to the fan idea trades in the third segment, however realistic and or unrealistic they may be across the board, not just the fan ones, but mine as well. So we're going to run through these trade targets. But first things first, I do want to hit on a little bit of not like breaking news, but just some important news right off the top that apparently Ty Lue is considered a very serious candidate for the vacant head coaching position for the Houston Rockets, as reported by Kelly Eco of The Athletic. So Kelly Eco kind of did a mailbag story Monday morning and was asked if Ty Lue was a serious candidate. So here is Kelly Eco's response really quickly before we get into our trades for today's episode. Lue is a serious candidate. I disagree with the notion that his sample size is hard to gauge. Remember, it was Lue who took over the job from David Blatt midway through the 2016 season and led the Cavaliers to the promised land, coming back from a 3-1 deficit to steal a Game 7 win in Oakland. That, of course, takes LeBron James, but also coaching guts. During his stint in Cleveland, Lue led the Cavs to 3 straight finals appearances. I'm fairly certain anyone within the Rockets organization would take those odds, especially being able to garner the respect of the greatest player in the world and compete on the league's highest platform. Lue has won and connected with LeBron. It also depends on the pieces put around him, but he's experienced enough to do the same with Harden and Westbrook. Lue's best tactical work was done in the postseason, an area where the Rockets have come up short 4 times in a row during D'Antoni's time. In an interview, his best-selling strategy will be the star names that he's worked with: LeBron, Kyrie Irving, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard. It doesn't get much better than that. So that's the excerpt, the thoughts from Kelly Eco, you know, in regards to Ty Lue as a legitimate candidate for the Rockets head coaching position. And I will sign that off by just saying, you know, I think that Lue would be a solid coach. I do. I don't know. And here's the problem with any coach that has been the head coach of a LeBron-led team is how much of it is a direct correlation of just simply having LeBron on your roster versus actually being a good coach. Like, I'm sorry, but that's just the issue, right? If Ty Lue had led another Eastern Conference team without LeBron James to the finals 3 straight years in a row, then yeah, like I could, you know, he would be getting offers left and right as a head coach for half the teams in the league. But I think having LeBron on your roster does kind of, I don't know, dampen the fact that you were the head coach. And that's part of the issue, right? They were talking about it during these past playoffs with Frank Vogel, that Vogel's never going to get the credit he truly deserves as a coach because LeBron is on his roster. So maybe I'm not giving Ty Lue enough credit for what he did with the Cavaliers, but specifically it's the Eastern Conference. The Cavs were able to kind of coast through much of the regular season, as well as coasting through many of their playoff opponents at times on the way to those 3 finals appearances with Ty Lue as the head coach. So that's where I'll leave that off at. But speaking of the Cavaliers, Our very first trade, actually, again, courtesy of one Karthik Prasad at Stanford KP on Twitter, who put the bug in everybody's ear about Kevin Love. And this seems to happen every summer with the Houston Rockets and Kevin Love and wanting to try and pair James Harden with the, former Minnesota big man, the guy who, you know, was the, the third point in the triangle between LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and himself during that Cleveland championship, kind of the forgotten guy from that Cleveland championship team. But here's the proposition, right? And this is an interesting one because it kind of necessitates a new style of defense because Kevin Love isn't exactly able to be that, he can't switch onto ones and twos and probably not even certain threes. You'd have to play a style of defense much similar to kind of the Denver Nuggets where, you know, they fight over picks constantly. They drop Nikola Jokic back into the paint. And that would kind of have to be the defensive style. But offensively, you'd still have that five-out spacing, and you'd also get a guy who's averaged, you know, pretty much double-double for his entire career. You'd get some much-needed defensive rebounding. You'd get a big, you know, a legitimate big, you know, a guy who's 6'10", to kind of throw at some of the other bigs in the paint, you know, if he has a full offseason to maybe put on a little bit more weight to be ready to bang as a, you know, center as opposed to a power forward in a Rockets lineup. It'd be kind of interesting, but here's the trade proposal. So the Rockets receive Kevin Love. It's a three-team trade proposal. Rockets receive Kevin Love. The Timberwolves receive Eric Gordon and Daniel House Jr. And the Cavaliers receive James Johnson, a 2020 second-round pick from the Timberwolves, a 2022 second-round pick from the Timberwolves, and then Austin Rivers on a sign-and-trade deal. Here's the rationale from all the teams involved. The Rockets is pretty obvious. The Rockets, you know, get rid of Eric Gordon, Daniel House Jr., and Austin Rivers. Three rotation players, yes. But Austin, a player who can very easily walk if he so chooses this offseason to try and go get a bigger payday elsewhere, which is what he receives in this trade, so that kind of mitigates that factor. Daniel House Jr., who has potentially burn some bridges within the organization, so it remains to be seen what exactly happens on his front, but I'm operating under the assumption that D-House will not be back because of said burn bridges, so he is a trade piece to kind of sweeten the deal across the board for anybody else. Eric Gordon is still a capable, quality rotation player who unfortunately had a bit of a down year and is essentially the only trade chip that the Rockets have to be able to match contract to match salary in these big types of trades. And so Eric Gordon has to be on the way out if you're bringing in a sizable contract like Kevin Love. So here's the thing, is the reason these three players all have to go is you have to match the contract value of Kevin Love's at $31.2 million. The Rockets would have to send out $25 million in salary. Now, if you're asking yourself, okay, if the Rockets sign and trade Austin Rivers at $9 million per season and Eric Gordon's making 16.8 and Daniel House is making 3.7, that's way more than $25 million. Why are you sending out that much salary? Why not just Eric Gordon and Austin Rivers? But here's the thing. The way the CBA works is when you sign and trade a player, that player, it only counts for half of their signed value as an outgoing incorporated into an outgoing sign and trade. So Austin Rivers, even though he would be signed and traded for a new contract worth $9 million a year in this scenario, his outgoing trade value is only $4.5 million for the Rockets for cap purposes. Now, for the team that absorbs him, he still counts as $9 million. This is one of those areas where the NBA CBA gets a little bit messy. And for anybody who wants to check out the CBA FAQ, I highly recommend you do that. You can just go to cbafaq.com, and it's got like 100-some-odd answers and questions and all that good stuff for anybody who wants to learn more about the collective bargaining agreement. It is a very resourceful tool, especially in the offseason when we're, you know, messing around with all these different trade proposals and ideas and things along these lines. So the Rockets look at this trade and probably do it, you know, would be interested in doing it for a couple different reasons. First of which being, you know, Kevin Love gives them everything they want and then some offensively to match what they want to do with small ball. It is, in fact, he would be, apart from the fact that he's a bit of a defensive liability, he gives them everything and then some offensively that you would want out of your small ball five. He gives them shooting. He gives them the ability to potentially even play through him in the post a little bit if they decide that's an option. He would be a lethal pick and pop player alongside James Harden, Russell Westbrook. Think of all the times that Robert Covington gets those really clean, wide open looks because all he has to do is come up and set a quick screen for James Harden, and then James just kind of floats in that quick little behind the back lefty pass or righty pass even, and Robert gets a wide open 3-point shot. Imagine Kevin Love being able to get all these wide open looks on a consistent basis playing alongside James and Russ. That's ideal. And then defensively, the one area of concern, right, is, okay, so the Rockets suddenly can't play their switch everything defense. That may or may not be the end of the world. We've seen them still be able to switch everything, you know, 1-4, where, you know, with Clint Capella, there were points where they opted to play a bit of more of a drop coverage style of defense where they left Clint, you know, down low guarding the hoop a bit more. And you could do the exact same thing with Kevin Love and just, you know, force the Rockets to not willingly switch everything throughout, you know, all five positions. And Kevin Love could just be the one exception where when he's on the court, you have him down low, and having him out there, having him be a part of the team means that you're not necessarily running small ball for an entire 48 minutes. PJ Tucker would still get his fair share, and potentially Jeff Green, if the Rockets re-sign him, they would each still get their fair share running essentially the backup 5 minutes behind Kevin Love. But having him at the five spot, you know, he's a guy who kind of shores up their biggest weakness area, which is rebounding. You know, defensively, the Rockets have been abysmal at rebounding the ball, giving opposing teams 2, 3, sometimes 4 extra possessions on one trip down the court. And that is exhausting, having to do that on a nightly basis. And thinking about doing that over the course of an 82-game season is just ridiculous. So I think he cures one of those ailments almost immediately, because the guy is still, even at this point in his career, basically a walking double-double. From the Timberwolves standpoint, they get Eric Gordon and Daniel House Jr., two quality rotation players, and all they're giving up is James Johnson, who is expiring salary, and they're giving up a couple future second rounders. But Eric Gordon, Daniel House Jr., a couple of quality rotation players to plug in to their young core to have alongside D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns. You know, potentially that's two legitimate potential starters for the T-Wolves if they so choose. You know, just gives them some much needed added depth to go along those two guys. And then for the Cavaliers, it's pretty simple. You're getting out of Kevin Love's, you know, 3-year, $31 million contract. You're getting out from that, and you're also recouping a little bit of, you know, draft capital. It's possible they might want like a first rounder from either the Rockets or from the T-Wolves to facilitate this trade a bit further. I don't know. I wouldn't be as inclined for the Rockets to throw in a first rounder to make it happen. I would try to maybe see if the Rockets could throw in a second, and then the T-Wolves swap out one of those second rounders for a first rounder, just because the T-Wolves, it feels like, are getting a really good deal by only giving up expiring salary in James Johnson and getting back two legitimate rotation players in Eric Gordon and Daniel House Jr. And then Austin Rivers is just in there again as more expiring, you know, salary. Essentially, the Cavaliers are shedding about $7 million in salary by doing this deal. And not only that, they're getting James Johnson and Austin Rivers, who would essentially be expiring contracts, because James Johnson is legitimately an expiring contract worth $15 million, almost $16 million. And then Austin Rivers, if he does a sign-and-trade deal, only the first year of the deal has to be guaranteed. So years 2 and 3 could be non-guaranteed years. And that would make him essentially an expiring contract, in the sense that they could then waive him after that first year before his contract guarantees in year 2 or in year 3. And then they save all this money immediately rather than having to ride out the duration of Kevin Love's contract. And that's kind of a big thing, especially when they've got Andre Drummond, who is more than likely going to opt into his player option. And that's another gigantic contract that the Cavaliers are going to have on paper. Payroll. So they could have, you know, Rivers, Johnson, and Drummond all expiring the following summer, and that would be a huge lump of cap space to be able to throw at a potential big name free agent in a free agency summer that is going to be jam-packed with big names, the summer 2021, where a lot of big name free agents are going to be on the move. And I know it's Cleveland, it's going to be kind of hard for them to potentially draw a free agent there, but they'd still want the cap room to potentially be able to do so if something kind of popped up that they were able to facilitate. So that's trade number one. I will get to trade number two here in segment two in just a moment after a quick message from our friends over at rockauto.com. Chain stores, like traditional brick-and-mortar stores, have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers, whereas rockauto.com's prices are the exact same for everybody, and they're always reliably low. They always offer the lowest possible prices rather than changing their prices based on what the market will bear, kind of like what airlines do. And the best part is rockauto.com is a family-owned business. They've been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years now, and they have everything that you need, from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps caps, motor oil, and even brand new carpet. So whether it's for your classic or your daily driver, get everything, and I mean everything, that you need in just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And be sure, this is the important part, do me a favor, be sure to write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. And we're back here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Going through our Rockets Trade Target Tuesday episode right now, and here comes the second trade, and I kind of dismissed this trade a little bit when it was first suggested and kind of continuously suggested throughout social media, but I've talked myself into it a bit more lately, and so here it goes. I'm sorry, it's the Miles Turner trade. But hear me out first, right? So it's Miles Turner comes to the Houston Rockets from the Indiana Pacers in exchange for Eric Gordon and Daniel House Jr. So you're asking yourself, okay, first, why would the Rockets do this trade? Why would the Pacers do this trade? I'm going to approach it from a Pacers standpoint first. And I'm going to say that it only, to me, if the rumors are true and if Mike D'Antoni is, you know, looking at, if the Pacers are strongly considering Mike D'Antoni for the head coaching position, Mike D'Antoni isn't exactly fond of bigs, let alone multiple bigs, right? So the idea of Mike D'Antoni running both Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis at the same time, I don't know if I completely buy into that. So why would he have both of those players, you know, on the payroll, under contract, on the roster, whatever, when you could turn Miles Turner into, because let's face it, Sabonis is the better player between the two right now. So why not turn Miles Turner into two more legitimate rotation players in Eric Gordon and Daniel House Jr., and two players that know MDA's system. So, you know, it would be bringing in two guys who you could bring into a fresh locker room, a fresh situation, you know, two guys who, you know, have loved playing for Mike D'Antoni. Again, the Rockets as an organization as a whole have had nothing bad to say about Mike D'Antoni. So you bring in two familiar faces to kind of help, you know, instill D'Antoni's philosophies and his system and kind of ease the transition to a new head coach. Not only that, but they're two good. Again, Eric Gordon is still a good player. He had a bit of a down season, but for a team like the Pacers, who are going to be completely locked in to this core that they have for the next 3 years or so, it makes sense to just continue to bolster that lineup any way that you can. And by adding Eric Gordon, you add, you know, another rotation guy, another kind of wing player, and then Daniel House, again, a really solid wing player on a steal of a contract to be able to bolster their roster and give them some much-needed depth, especially because here's the thing, right? If Victor Oladipo walks next summer, then suddenly you are even more screwed as Indiana, because if he walks for nothing, then you're going to be very much SOL trying to upgrade that roster. And so this kind of gives them a final push to run that fast-paced style of basketball that Mike D'Antoni is known for wanting to run in the Eastern Conference. And I would be a roster consisting of Eric Gordon, Daniel House Jr., Malcolm Brogdon, Victor Oladipo, Sabonis, who else do they have? Jeremy Lamb, you know, Dougie McDermott. Like, that lineup is a really, really solid line. Daniel House Jr., I'm almost forgetting one of the trade pieces. That's a really solid lineup. And then from the Rockets standpoint, it makes a lot of sense because it follows the same thing that I've been trumpeting all offseason so far, is getting a legitimate big with some size who can still space out the floor. And to think about the fact that, one, Miles Turner is still young. He's only 24 years old. But he's also a guy that, you know, James Harden essentially made Clint Capella what he is, and James Harden is the reason that Clint Capella was able to be traded to the Atlanta Hawks, you know, in that four-team trade for the Rockets to receive back Robert Covington, a legitimate, you know, rotation guy who's able to contribute to the team in a big way, in a different way than Clint Capella was, because James Harden made Clint Capella look like a god of a center. by catching the lob passes. By, you know, Clint Capela is able to average almost 20 and 10 simply by running pick and roll with James Harden. So then you throw Miles Turner into that situation with James. You give Miles Turner an offseason to kind of build up that chemistry with James Harden. He's a guy who can play kind of above the rim. He's got the verticality, the vertical spacing to be able to do that, but he's also got the ability to space the floor and be that pick and pop option and still keep things spaced out offensively, which makes the Rockets' potential offense even more dynamic by running the pick and roll with James or running a pick and pop setup with James or Russ or however they want to do it. You could still offensively use Russ as your center and run a lot of the offense through him when he's on the floor. And then Miles Turner can just spot up on the three-point line when that's the case. But defensively, he gives you a legitimate center, a legitimate guy who can put some size on opposing bodies. And he's not a bulky center, right? He's a guy who, with, you know, proper training, could potentially be a guy like Clint Capela who might not be, you know, he's never going to be able to comfortably guard ones and twos, but he wouldn't be a complete liability if you switch him out onto the perimeter with proper training and if you get him, you know, the right tools behind him as far as a defensive scheme goes. Now, I'm still hopeful that a head coach that comes in is going to want to calibrate that Rockets defensive scheme, and I hope that they do move away from the complete switch everything defense and move to a slightly more traditional style of defense. I don't know. It feels like the switch everything works sometimes, and then other times it kind of gets abused depending on the players out there on the court if there's, you know, some players that are easier to target on the Rockets defense. Specifically, we saw Robert Covington being targeted all the time because his on-ball defense was subpar. We saw Ben McLemore being targeted consistently by LeBron James in the second round. Now, granted, you know, those guys had areas where they did hold their own, but the fact of the matter still remains is that when you have a switch-everything defense, opposing teams are going to target your weakest defenders and try to attack them one-on-one. And sometimes that plays into the favor of the Rockets. Sometimes that plays into the favor of the opposing teams. But having Miles Turner, having a legitimate five who can kind of pack the paint a little bit and be that second line of defense, something we haven't seen from the Rockets since Clint Capela left the organization, would be kind of a new look for this team, a refreshing look for the defensive outlook of this Houston Rockets team. So that's my Miles Turner take. I've talked myself into it from both sides. I think it makes a lot of sense on both sides, and maybe there's some Pacers fans out there who are listening to this and they think, man, this guy's insane. That could very well be true. You know, I don't work in the front office, but I am just spitballing on these trades, and I think it makes sense from both sides, but I would happily engage in a discourse as to why it doesn't make sense from the Pacers standpoint. So with that, I think that's going to wrap up our second segment. So coming up, we'll hear some fan ideas, some fan trade proposals, some of which involve jumping directly into the Rockets rebuild. Some of them are not rebuilding specific. Some of them involve just trading Russell Westbrook. So we'll hear those in just one moment. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Do me a huge favor to stay up to date with the show and all the goings on here at Locked On Rockets. Do me a favor, follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, as well as the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. That's where we post the links directly to the show every single day. We also post memes, we post stat updates, rumors, speculation, analysis, updates for the show. All that good stuff happens at my Twitter as well as the Locked On Rockets Twitter. And hey, while you're at it, if you're on Twitter, do me a favor and follow the Clutch City Control Room blog at Clutch City CR. I would sincerely appreciate it. So here we are for our final segment where we are going to go over some fan trade scenarios now. So submitted by B. Bryant is kind of one of these sweeping trade scenarios. Now this is a gigantic one. God, how do I even break this down? Okay, it is a four-team trade. Wow, four-team. Okay, four-team trade where the involving the Rockets, the Knicks, the Magic, and the Pistons. I'm kind of thinking, you know, man, B. Bryant, you might be a Knicks fan because the way this kind of played out, it looks like it sort of favors the Knicks. All right, so Pistons receive Nilakita, Tucker, Julius Randle, and a 2021 first-round pick from the L.A. Clippers through the New York Knicks. There we go. So that's the first trade. The Knicks receive Russell Westbrook and Blake Griffin. The Magic receive Eric Gordon, a 2023 first rounder from the Knicks, a 2020 first rounder from the Knicks, so the number 8 overall pick, and a 2023 first rounder from the Knicks via Dallas. And then the Rockets receive Bobby Portis, Mo Bamba, Wayne Ellington, Aaron Gordon, the 2021 first rounder from the Knicks, the 2026 first rounder from the Knicks, the 2020 first rounder from the Knicks through the LA Clippers, and the 2021 second round pick from the Knicks via Charlotte. That is a gigantic trade. So basically, our guy B. Bryant has hit the absolute reset button on this Rockets franchise, because here's the thing, is if you're trading Russell Westbrook and Eric Gordon and PJ Tucker and you're not getting back any immediate, contributors, looking at this group, there's not really, there's very few guys on the, Aaron Gordon a little bit, maybe Bobby Portis a little bit, but out of that immediate group, there are very few impact players. And I almost don't even think this needs to be a four-team trade. If you want to just hit the reset button and just ship Russell Westbrook out of here, then you can do it and just send him to the Knicks without all this added, without the added, you know, extra two teams. I'm sure the Knicks would gladly take Russell Westbrook for, you know, some draft capital and, you know, basically contract filler, because let's face it, the Knicks want a star player. It's Madison Square Garden. They're going to sell tickets no matter what. Getting Russ in a Knicks jersey would not be that difficult. And the Rockets would probably, the Knicks would probably be the only team willing to give the Rockets actually something worthwhile back in a Russell Westbrook trade right now, simply because it'd be a star player to continue putting butts in seats. So I don't think you'd need to go through all this trouble to do that. I think you could still get back some of that draft capital. But I appreciate the effort that went into designing this four-team trade, because those are almost never any fun to design. Now, moving on to our next trade, we've got our guy Scorpio Fitness, one of the eternally pessimistic Rockets fans on Rockets Twitter, who also wants to blow it up. He says, trade Harden to Brooklyn for two first-round picks, Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, and Jared Allen. Then he says, follow that up by trading Russell Westbrook, Eric Gordon, and PJ Tucker to the 76ers for Ben Simmons, Al Horford, and Tobias Harris. I think Brooklyn probably absolutely jumps at that very first trade, because if you have a chance to pair James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Durant in the Eastern Conference, that team is bound to be a top, you know, top two seed easily. You fill it in with, you know, minimum contracts around those guys, and that's kind of an unstoppable team right there. Now, as far as that second trade, Russell Westbrook for EG and PJ to the 76ers for Ben Simmons, Al Horford, and Tobias Harris, I don't see the 76ers pulling the trigger on that trade. I don't see them dealing Ben Simmons for anything less than another generational type talent, and it would have to be a younger generational type talent. I've kind of made the claim that, you know, Ben Simmons to the Golden State Warriors, actually, in place of, you know, basically Warriors would deal Andrew Wiggins, the number two overall pick, and then some future draft capital for Ben Simmons. And then you put Ben Simmons in what is more than likely the optimal scenario, because then he gets to play around two legitimately deadly shooters in Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. It'd be an interesting dynamic, because then you've got another non-shooter on the court in Draymond Green, sure, but defenses still respect Draymond a little bit from the three-point line, at least enough to where they wouldn't be able to key in enough on Ben Simmons. But I digress. I don't think the Sixers say yes to that deal. The Brooklyn side of that deal is interesting, to say the least. I don't know if both sides say yes. It's an interesting deal because those first-round picks would have to be much later first-round picks, kind of after the primes of all those players, similarly to how the Rockets' first-round picks, you know, were kind of spread out in the Russell Westbrook-Chris Paul deal. But that's an interesting trade. I will say interesting on that one and just kind of leave it there. But our boy Scorpio Fitness, always known for wanting to blow up the James Harden-Russell Westbrook experiment. Now, let's go down here. We've got another one from Drew McWilliams. So this one involves the 76ers again, the Orlando Magic again, and of course the Houston Rockets. In this one, the Rockets would receive Al Horford. Okay, interesting so far. I like it. The 76ers get Eric Gordon, Terrence Ross, and Ben McLemore. And then the Magic receive a 2021 first-round pick from the 76ers and a 2021 second-round pick from the Houston Rockets. So essentially, the Magic are only in here to throw in Terrence Ross to the 76ers, I suppose. Now, salary-wise, the Rockets wouldn't be able to make this work. I know that trade NBA is a little wonky with how it works as far as counting salary up, but just eyeballing it, $27.5 million, I'm assuming that the Rockets would need to somewhere hit, let's see, $27.5 million. I'm going to say $22.5. I think $22.5 does it. Let's see. Yeah, so $22.5 million kind of gets the deal done from the Rockets' perspective. So the only way for the Rockets to hit that $22.5 million is to essentially, they would have to ship out Eric Gordon plus two of Ben McLemore, Austin Rivers, or potentially Daniel House Jr. And the interesting thing about that, similarly to how I suggested the sign and trade with Austin Rivers in segment one, I think this is an interesting trade because Al Horford is another one of those guys who, you know, his timeline kind of matches up with James Harden and Russell Westbrook. Yeah, he's had a bit of a down year for the Sixers, but he had plenty of success with the Boston Celtics. And he's a great passing big. He's a versatile big man, a guy who would be very lethal being able to either A, run the offense through him occasionally, you know, getting easier looks potentially for James Harden and Russell Westbrook, you know, dicing towards the basket or just operating off ball a little bit. He's a good defensive big. There's a lot of pluses to Al Horford. His contract is just a little rough around the edges right now, and he is coming off of a bit of a down season with the 76ers. That being said, I would move away from including Ben McLemore in this trade, and you could get away with doing it by adding Daniel House Jr. and then adding that sign-and-trade element of Austin Rivers. And here's the thing, you could actually make this more enticing for the Orlando Magic by throwing Austin Rivers in there and then sending him to Orlando, and Austin would probably more than likely be super-duper inclined to opt into a sign-and-trade deal to the Orlando Magic because, hey, the dude lives in Orlando. That's where his home is. He lives 20 minutes away from the NBA bubble. So if you send Austin to Orlando in this potential trade, you yank out Ben McLemore, throw in Daniel House Jr., the 76ers get Eric Gordon, D-House, two rotation guys, two shooters, two guys who can space the floor a bit more for Simmons and Embiid. And then they also get Terrence Ross from the Magic, who, you know, as Drew McWilliams kind of pointed out in his reasoning for this trade, is that the Magic get to invest in the future with these with this draft capital, and Terrence Ross isn't really a part of their future anyways. So, yeah, losing Eric Gordon would be kind of a big loss, but if you replace him with Al Horford, and then your starting lineup became something along the lines of Russ, Harden, Robert Covington, PJ Tucker, and Al Horford, and then off the bench you still have Ben McLemore, you assume you're re-signing Gerald Green because Green comes back every single summer to be with the Rockets. Gerald Green, bring back Jeff Green, and then you still have the taxpayer MLE to throw at an impact player to bring off the bench, somebody who can be a legitimate rotation player. That's an interesting trade proposal. I kind of like that one. Al Horford wasn't a guy that I was kind of thinking about, but you know, along the same lines of the Kevin Love trade, it would kind of make sense if you wanted a guy who could, again, space the floor, be somebody that you can maybe run the offense through a little bit as a third option in the stretches of the game where you have either Harden resting or Russ resting, and you want an option that isn't one of your two guards. And based on kind of some of the stagger or don't stagger arguments, it seems like the lineups are better when Russell Westbrook isn't staggered alongside James Harden and actually gets to play with James. Because he's able to attack defenses off the bounce. He's probably the best option when it comes to attacking defenses outside of a James Harden double team when he's healthy and when he's, you know, when his body is completely right, not like it was in the Disney bubble. So that's an interesting, I kind of like that one. I think that's been my favorite fan theory trade so far, again, with some tweaks on my own behalf to kind of adjust the trade. But I like that Drew brought that to our attention. So thank you for that, Drew. I appreciate that. Now, as always, we will continue these Trade Target Tuesdays every Tuesday. So next Tuesday, I kind of recycled some of the ones from last Tuesday because I didn't get to all of them. So next Tuesday, I'm going to do this again, and I will be putting out probably a tweet on Monday afternoon, and I'll say, hey, if you've got any trade ideas, send them my way, and I will touch base on them in the podcast. So if I didn't get to your trade idea on either of these first two Trade Target Tuesdays, I apologize. I didn't quite organize it the best of ways because I just kind of put that one random tweet out there, and then I kind of lost track with how many people chimed in on it. I wasn't expecting such a huge response. So moving forward, I'll probably start putting out tweets every Monday and just say, hey, drop in your trade ideas right here. If I haven't touched base on it, just redo it, drop it here, and I'll get on it, you know, in today, in tonight's podcast, since I record the Tuesday podcast on Monday nights for Tuesday mornings. So with that, I think that's going to wrap up today's episode. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.